No, but I own all the utilities, so it's actually times 10.
Board Games on 95BFM. Our weekly chat with Waitemata local board head Pippa Coombe.
Yes, you may be getting deja vu to hearing that sting. We have another local government-focused interview today. It was the second part of an interview with the General Manager for Democracy Services at Auckland Council. We were discussing the issues, perhaps, with voter engagement in especially the Auckland or Tamaki Makaurau local elections, which are, of course, coming up later this year. At the point that we left off, we were discussing what we would describe, and I think it's fair to say, is the kind of rather dire turnout of Auckland voters at around 35%. So we started and off this interview by talking about the council's goal of getting people involved. The upcoming goal for this election, from what I understand, is at least 40% voter turnout. That still seems relatively low. Is this just being as realistic as possible, or is this the amount of people that we want to partake in local elections?
I would love to be able to have an 80%, 90% turnout, but that goal is realistic on the basis of the trends in the experience that we have in the Auckland context. You know, between 2013 and 2016, we actually did get an increase from 35 to 38.5%, and that was a pretty big achievement. So being able to buck the trend and actually increase participation is pretty good in its own right. I would love to be able to get much, much higher numbers, but we need to be realistic about the amount of money and effort that we can throw at it.
You touched on this before in the answer to the last question. A way of trying to up this number is by increasing education as to what local councils do or what local governments do, and reaching those as soon as you're allowed to vote. Being able to understand how to vote and what you're voting on is a huge part of that. So from my understanding, the Democracy Services and or Council are rolling out a youth voting program in schools, which enables students to take part in a mock election ahead of the official election. This is reaching quite a range of schools, and over 10,000 people took part in the last elections. What does this aim to do?
That's right. It's really raising that awareness of understanding of both what the council does and how the voting process takes place. So it's raising awareness of, you know, how you vote, and also what the issues are that are being talked about by candidates. And then the youth voting program is a program that we've been running for several elections. And one of the things that we have found as well is that when young people go back home, they talk to their parents about what they've learned at school, and they say, who are you going to vote for? And they actually do also take those conversations back home with them. And so it also has an impact on the parents. But primarily is we want those young people to be interested and to understand why it's important to vote so that they do it when they turn 18.
What happens with all the votes that are cast in this mock election?
We count them. And we publish the results. And the other thing in the youth voting program is that there's also a referendum question, and that's because we want to show them what a referendum looks like, so they get exposure to the different kinds of votings that can happen. In 2016, we actually developed those questions with our policy team, and basically there were questions around outdoor smoking, and we asked them to rank in what order they wanted the council to ban smoking in public places. And actually it did inform the policy process. So we did use that as the voice of our young people telling us what's important to them. But interestingly, the youth voting results tend to be a good indicator of the results of the real elections. We also, you know, out of interest, compare the results to see the trends.
This is going to be quite a naive question or naive point, because obviously the voting age is set at 18. But if these are the people that are perhaps even the most educated about elections and the process of electing people and the issues because they're so actively involved in it, why shouldn't we actually take into consideration the results of these votes?
Yeah, legally we can't. So the Local Electoral Act says you need to be 18 to vote. You would need to change the legislation to do that.
But do you think that perhaps we should, if these are the most educated people that are voting? I would suggest that perhaps that those that are in school within a program like this are perhaps even more qualified to vote than, say, my 94-year-old grandmother who can't remember what day it is, slash even my friends who perhaps have no interest and would vote for the sake of voting. Do you think that perhaps we should consider lowering the age if we're going to run programs that are so intensive like this?
Yeah, I think we would need, so the youth voting program at the moment is obviously not compulsory, and we're doing as an education and awareness activity. You would have, I think what the question you're asking would require a much bigger national debate about fundamentally when do we consider somebody is mature enough to exercise their fundamental democratic right. The same way, you know, at what age do we think that people should be able to drink, should be able to drive? And so it's a question about your ability to make an informed choice by yourself. I think another valid debate to have is, you know, how we evolve democratic participation in a society that little by little sort of is losing sort of respect of the importance of one person, one vote. And are there other ways where we can hear the voice of people and take it into account in decisions that are made by politicians? And so that's a big field of, you know, how do you evolve participative democracy? How do you get the voice of people taken into account in different ways than just voting? And that's, as a society, that's also where we need to go, and certainly as a council, one of the key areas where we look at is what other forms of engagement can we think of so that we know we're making decisions that reflect the views of the community.
What other ways can people participate in democracy in local council?
So we have, depending on the kind of subject, but we do specific consultations on specific aspects. So, for instance, bylaws, and you can, you know, have your say and provide feedback that way, either through our website or by attending events. That's one way. Hearings that happen about sort of key decisions are public as well, and can you can attend those as well. You have mentioned attending the meetings of the council, and both the local boards or the governing body meetings, mostly open to the public. And you can, if you're very passionate about a certain aspect of an agenda item that they're discussing, actually ask to speak to the council. The other thing is that the governing body meetings, the big meetings, are webcast. So if you go on our website, you can actually watch them live on your computer or on your phone and actually get a feel about what they're discussing and what it's about. All the agendas are on our website. They are public. You can read the papers and see what advice is being provided. You can talk to your local board members or to your ward councillors and actually really let them know what you think. You can be part of the Auckland Council People's Panel, which we use on a regular basis to ask them for their opinion on a vast number of different things when we try and make decisions on what is best going to work for people. So there's plenty of different ways where you can get involved.
Are there any other ways overseas or elsewhere that you've heard of that we haven't quite adopted to yet that you'd think would be an interesting thing to implement in New Zealand and in Auckland in particular?
One question that comes back regularly, and I'm not going to give you my view on it, is whether voting should be compulsory. it is in Australia, and whether it's a duty that you want to enshrine in legislation. We've got some very prominent lawyers who have advocated that this be the case. One of the things that we know about compulsory voting is that making it illegal not to vote doesn't necessarily make people vote more. What makes people vote more is awareness of the issues, of the events, of the issues, and of the politicians. So education is key. The other thing that gets discussed very regularly and that I'm very passionate about is civic education in schools and actually teaching children about our political institutions, both national and local, and explaining to them, you know, how our government actually works. And that education at an early age is really, really important. Other than that, you know, we have done quite a lot of canvassing of research around the world, and we will be testing for these coming elections how we write our communications message to make people, you know, to encourage people to vote. And for instance, how do we create a sense of belonging that you are part of a voter group, so why it's cool to be a voter as opposed to voting, and how can I communicate with you to really encourage you to vote. So we'll be testing some different messages and different techniques for that as well. But what we know is there's no one way to encourage people to vote more. There's got a lot more needs to be done. I haven't mentioned, I've kept for last, the one that is the closest to my heart. Is one of the things that people are telling us is that our voting system is antiquated, and, you know, nobody uses the post anymore, and really the implementation of online voting would make it easier for people to vote. And whatever we can do to make it easier for people to vote, we should do.
That's not a ladder, that's an upside down snake. Board games on 95 BFM.